And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Goldmines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome. God damn it, what do we do here? I shouldn't have to tell you. We get inside the minds of comedians, and oh, what amazing minds they are. Fuck, man, so many different levels. Levels to be unlocked, stories to be told, dialogue to be had and shared. Today, guess who we talk to? I gotta call this guy my brother. I'm gonna say mentor and brother, man. A true OG in the game. But one of the OGs with a fucking young spirit. I'm talking about Cedric the Entertainer, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up, dog? What up, brother? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm excited about this one. I'm excited about this conversation here.
I am too. I'm more likely just glad we're not in a bucket of ice right now.
Yeah, right now. Okay, yeah. You thought it was going to be cold as balls. No, it's not.
Yeah,
cold.
I was like, oh, shit.
No, Sid, I wouldn't bring you on cold as balls. That's the show that I do for just, you know, the athletes, the sports figures. This is
all right.
This is strictly based around comedians and comedians only, man. And for you, Sid, I've known you for so long, but we've never had an in-depth conversation. And this is my opportunity to do that. That's why I wanted to do this show. It was to talk to my peers in a way that I haven't talked to them before and truly get to know them, right? Because yep. I know you, but I don't know you. This is an opportunity yep. to like to get to fucking know you. So said St. Louis, I know that's where you're from. You wear that badge with goddamn pride. It's a badge of honor that you have. Why comedy in St. Louis? Why was stand-up comedy the choice that you ended up making?
You know, I mean, St. Louis is a Midwest city, you know, a lot where it was dope dealers and athletes. And, you know, and the thing was, we didn't have a basketball team, a major league basketball team. So it was baseball players that were known. So anybody that you saw that kind of like popped up in the city was either a baseball player or athlete. And then there was entertainers. So we had singers like Angela Winbush and, you know, old school people came from there, Red Fox, of course. But comedy started to pop off because it was like a small town where it was clubs and everybody just tried to get out. And comedy started to pop off in the late 80s, early 80s, mid early 80s. And that's when I just discovered I could do it from another comedian who kind of put me on game. He just liked what I used to be saying and was like, yo, dog, you can do this comedy thing.
So it wasn't like, you know, the inspiration came, you know, a lot of those stories stem from, I saw such and such on stage. And that's when I said, fuck it, man. I want to do it. I got to do it. It was pretty much, you were a funny guy, cool as shit. A comedian that you knew said, yo, you should try it. And you said, fuck it. Why not?
Yeah. That pretty much was it. Cause my mother was a school teacher. And so our family dynamic was to go to college, get a job. And, you know, grow, get, you know, come up in your job. And that's what you do. Right. And mm-hmm. that's what I did. I went to college, got my degree. I was working for State Farm. I was the original Jake from State Farm. Khakis, polo shirt. Oh, dear. Clay dealing with black folks in their cars, man. You know, brother would come there with a 82 Cutlass talking about it's a classic. I'm like, nah, this is old. Dog.
No, it's not, man. It's just an old car, dude.
It's an old car, dog.
Does State Farm know that?
They didn't know. They didn't know. They needed me to be able to inform them because they was overpaying bros quite a bit for them Cutlasses for a minute.
I'm saying the State Farm to date know that Cedric the Entertainer was an employee for them.
They act like they don't. They act like they don't. They ain't never called me and asked me to do nothing.
Said that's the problem right there. You got to call them. I promise you, if you were to tell State Farm that you were employed in your younger times by State Farm, I promise you, I'm on record right now on the show, I promise you that you would have a campaign with State Farm. There is no way.
I'm calling them tomorrow.
Said, I promise you that you will have a deal with State Farm if they were aware that Cedric the Entertainer once upon a time was employed by State Farm. There's no way. There's no fucking way. It's too much authenticity and transparency through that story.
It's so real.
I'm dead ass. Here's what I say to you, Sid.
All right.
You are one of the few comedians that have checked every box, right? And here's what I mean when I say checked every box. We can go down the list of the ones that I feel have. If I leave somebody out, tell me, and I'll just stand corrected. When I say check every box, I'm talking about stand-up comedy. And from stand-up comedy, they went to TV, they went to movies, right? I mean, the American dream as a stand-up comedian when we started was to somehow get seen, somehow get a TV show. Well, at first it was to do Def Jam or Comic View or something. You had to get on that first. And from that, the goal and hope was to get a TV show. And from that, it was to become a movie star, a big name, household name, and to always be able to fucking tour. And in my eyes, is that not the American dream behind the will and want for a stand-up comedian for longevity in the business?
Period. That literally is the playbook. Like, everybody wanted it. That's what you do. You start in your local city. You try to get known there locally, get known, get your brand up, get your name up, try to become a headliner. And then you tour a little bit, just comedy wise, whatever, regionally, get your name known, then get on TV. That was it. And I've been blessed to definitely hit all them boxes, including Broadway. Like, a lot of people, I had a short run on Broadway too, but it's dope that I did it, like a live stage Broadway theater play.
Like all of these things.
It was called American Buffalo. David Mamet, big deal. Me, John Leguizamo, Haley Joel Osment. It was
holy
dope.
Shit. What was the experience like though performing on Broadway? Because I hear it's hard. I hear the schedule is insane. But the live performance, they say, is like no other. How'd you feel about the live performance?
You know, the thing is, for a comedian, it's hard because we are spontaneous, and on Broadway is the first time I had to learn that it was about the words. So again, the playwright is the most important part of Broadway. So the hardest thing for me was, as a comedian, was not to deviate when I saw an opportunity to say something funny. Mm. Like when I saw, like, oh, this would kill right now. Mm. When I did it in one rehearsal, and you know, it ripped, and I thought it was cold. I was like, oh, I killed this shit. So then the director came up after rehearsal and was like, hey, man, that was great. Don't do that. I was like, whoa, what? He was like, yeah, don't do that. Yeah, I was like, damn. But it was, you know, and I think, you know, when I, as you grow, like, as an opportunity, you grow using your natural capabilities. But it was the one thing that taught me how to treat the art of acting way more important. So, you know, when you make a choice to be like a stronger actor in your career, like to say, all right, cool, I'm gonna get out of my comfort zone, not do these things that's kind of like my natural ability. That was the school that I learned. Like, okay, you got to go to work. You got to go in here and find real minute details to make it special for you, to get that character life, to make people feel like, oh, couldn't anybody just play this character? You played it a certain way. And so that was the greatest tool I learned from that. I always tell people that it was the time that I had to go to work. I no longer could just count on my natural ability to be able, like, oh, I can just turn it on. Like in a sitcom, you can just turn it on like a little bit.
That's dope as fuck to hear you say that, because you know, I mean, I've never done Broadway. I don't know if I ever will, but I, the respect and admiration that I hear people have for it, that have done it, participated in it, been fans of it, it's a monumental thing, man. And that's dope as hell. I didn't even know that you did Broadway. You know, I'm strictly well versed on the said that I've seen blossom, grow, succeed, and that's actually added crazy layers of inspiration for me. My biggest question to you is, when did you know, okay, fuck, it's here? Like, this is stardom. Oh shit, I'm about to get it. It's really in arm's reach. At what point did you know it was coming?
You know, for comics, it happens at a different time. Like, one, if we find ourselves on stage where we know where you trust, like even if you, even if you're not ready to do it, that you trust you're going to go up there and have a good set, that you're going to go and make people laugh and you accomplish it to any degree. You might not get a standing ovation that night, but you accomplish that thing of, like, I went over there and got them people on my side. Mm-hmm. That's when you realize you don't have to go back to a job. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, you more, for me, because my mother, you know, kind of instilled in me that having a job, that safety, that kind of comfort of being a, you know, a person that's got a 9-to-5, that was really fearful for me to be able to leave my job and be able to go out. And so when I realized that consistently I could walk up on that stage and do it, that's when I knew, oh, I'm never going back. And that was the thing that made me feel more like a star than anything, because I knew who I was. Like, I was like, I'm doing this and I no longer have to be scared about, like, not doing it. Like, I do this.
How many years were you in it before you quit the job?
2 years. So, and it was interesting because I kind of got the State Farm job very simultaneously to when I discovered I could do stand up. So I got probably within a week, right? So I worked my butt off and, you know, went through all the ups and downs of all kinds of little penny ante jobs, and then finally landed the job, right? You're like, oh, I got the corporate gig and now I'm here, I'm working, I got the office, the little cubicle and respect, and got my name outside, and I got a little company card sometimes. Oh, I'm doing it.
Sometimes,
the little company card when you get to pull out, you know. So then, same time, about maybe 2 weeks later, dude was like, yo, I put you in this comedy competition. You're going to go up. If you go up, then do it. And I went up. The first time I ever did it, I won $500. He kind of helped me do my set. Percy Cruz II, you know, he was the dude that gave me an idea to how to set my set up. And I won money. And I was like, yo, this is it. But, you know, of course, you just don't leave right away. I was like, you know, because I was smart. I had, you know, a college degree, man. I had health benefits and dental and you know.
You thought it out.
I can't just leave this fast.
Let me wait. And let me just make sure. I can't. I'm going to make sure. I need to just double check.
I was taking girls to lunch with my little thing. I was a man. You ain't get that up for no jokes.
So you're in it. Fuck it. You got it now. You've made the decision to do it. It's working. It's going as planned. Comic View, man. You know, you hosting Comic View, that was a big deal. It was a big fucking deal because there was a certain level of cool that Cedric the Entertainer had. There was a certain level of cool and style that you had, and your comedy was never compromised because of your cool and fucking style. It almost made you funnier, right? After Comic View, how did the fucking transition happen to the show? That's when were you introduced to Hollywood after Comic View? Because I remember you being on Comic View, and what I don't know is what was the segue or the bridge to all of the shit that started happening after? Does that make sense?
That's so great. I want to kind of give you a little background too, because even Comic View was a wild choice because Def Comedy Jam had popped off. And so I did it. And then I did Showtime at the Apollo. That was one of the first big ones that Black people can get. Mm-hmm. And then I did Def Comedy Jam. And then, you know, they were steady doing it. And I had a lot of new jokes, man. I had been at home hosting, right? You be at the crib, got a little night. I'm hosting. I got gangs of jokes now. And I want to go back on Def Jam, but they telling me I just was on, you can't go on. So I want to go to, now I want to go to Comic View. I just want to get on TV. Mm. And all my peers are telling me, don't go to BET. At the time, you already been on HBO, dog. Keep your brand big. Don't go to, you know, and it's interesting because people will lead you down the wrong path sometimes, you know, because they telling me, don't do that, don't do it. And I'm like, look, I just need to get these jokes off on TV. So I decided to go do Comic View, and it just so happened to be the year that DL was going to step down, and they was picking a new host. Mm-hmm. And that's how I became the host. I was probably by far, like, just by my skill set, you know, knew that I was like, yo, I could do this easy, because I'm hosting every other night in a hood club, like, yeah, those black people.
You're getting nothing working. You're in what we will refer to as the gym. You're in the gym on a consistent basis. So the opportunity, it wasn't like it was, this thing was something you sought out for. You just so happened to.
Right.
Wow.
I had the need to get this material off because I felt like it was going to date.
Wow.
Like, I had all these funny jokes and I was like, this is going to date. I need to put it on TV somewhere. And Def Jam wasn't going to give me the opportunity that season. And so I just was like, well, BET it is. And that's what I did. And boom. So then I became the host. Now I'm nightly. Now I'm on every night. I'm a star at this point. I'm literally, you know, you jump from, you know, them jumps, man. When you get like, all right, you know, you're going to headline, you're going to get 2,000 a night. Then all of a sudden, you know, with that, I went to 10,000 a night. Mm. I'm working 3 nights a week. So I'm coming home 30,000 on a weekend. Like, are you serious right now? Who drinking?
who won what?
Who won? I got 30,000 itching, dog.
Man, shut up. You over here talking about what you got to put on. Shut your ass up, man. I just got the fucking roll. Just tell me what you want. I got it.
Put some cheese on that bitch, dog. I don't give a shit.
I don't give a fuck. Oh, hey, man. About.
Order that shit,
man. Dirt. You want a cheesesteak or not, man? Get the fucking sandwich.
God, it's the marinara sauce, everybody. Nigga, I don't give a fuck. I'm rich. So then that was a great run. I did that for one season. And then the tour of that. So it was an idea to do me, DL, as a tour. Walter Lake, the same dude that did Kings of Comedy. He did us as a tour, and that's how I ended up getting the Steve Harvey show. I met Steve many years back. We became very good friends. He had a club down in Dallas, and I would go host for him when he would go out and tour. So he would go out and tour, and then he would let me be his host. So that became my consistent work as well. And then, but me and DL was out on tour, and we came to LA. And so we would alternate, like, headlining, depending on where we were. But if you're in your hometown, of course, you're the headline.
Yeah.
So he was telling me all these people coming to see him. Now, I ain't know nothing about Hollywood, Kev. Like, I ain't understand it. So he telling me, you know, CAA coming. William Morris going to be here. ABC going to be in the house. NBC going to be in the house. All these people coming to see him. And I'm like, oh, he the headliner. And I guess I'm going to be looking like the little corny dude that go before him. So in my mind, I'm like, all I know is they going to be in the audience. They going to get to see me too. I switched my show up. I went hard. Like, I had lighting packages. I was the dude before DL. But when I came out, it was like special. Like, it was like, yo, like I talked to the light man. I was like, I want to do this and I want to do that. And then I had these music cues, and, you know, it was the thing, like, giving people a show, the entertainer thing. Like, yeah. And that was, and they signed. So he got signed and I got signed that same
night.
Get
the fuck. Now, wait, let's just back up. God damn it. Shut the front door. Shut the front door. And everybody put their plates down, because you got to listen. It's so unreal how opportunities are found by accident. It's no plan. It's about being ready when you're presented with the moment. And right now, if I'm understanding and hearing correctly, like, say you're talking about a moment, like, you and DL, you know, fuck, you ended up hosting, DL stepped down, you ended up killing, you got a name, you popping, you and DL say, hey, man, let's go ahead and combine, let's tour together. We co-headlining, switching it city to city. You come across California now. DL tells you, hey, man, I got a lot of people out here. They're coming to see me tonight. Tonight's going to be a big night. You automatically understand, well, there's people there to see you. I got to touch the same stage. They're going to see me too.
Yeah.
But goddamn it, they're going to remember me.
Yeah.
I got to make sure I have a lasting impression as well. You do the show. How did DL? Did DL? What did he say? Was DL? Did he? Hey man, what the fuck? Like, what did he say? He get on stage. What did DL say?
He already knew. Like, he already knew. Like, that's what I do. Like, he was like, "This gonna be." But he DL. Like, he a legend, and he don't really ever care like who goes in front of him. He just he. That's one thing I love about him. Like, it don't really matter to him. He loved the artist stand up. He gonna go up there regardless. He not measuring himself by, you know, like who the code is. He just got his point of view, and that's what he gonna say. And so he was DL. He ripped. He got it. He got his own deal that night. I got a deal. So
that's insane. That's insane. That's insane. I love that. So Steve Harvey show. You get on the goddamn Steve Harvey show. I mean, you're you. I love that you got on the show. You're you. And as a young guy coming up at the time in comedy, it was so dope to see, like, you know, the DL Hughley show, you know, Steve Harvey, Saturday Entertainer, you know, Damon Wayans at the time. You see all these black men on these prime networks, and they're representing television. Yeah. You know, even you could go to Martin when Martin had a shit. You see all of these fucking black men, and this is the hope and drive that you want to see, because now you know it's possible. The doors have been open. You guys are killing. But then you guys, you call an audible out of nowhere. The Kings of Comedy Tour comes up.
Yeah.
The Kings of fucking Comedy Tour comes up. Now, I want to go on record, and I want to say what I'm about to say. The Kings of Comedy Tour, basically, if you look at Eddie Murphy and you look at the big events that came from Eddie Murphy and Eddie Murphy touring, right?
Yeah.
And outside of that, for our culture, you had Martin Lawrence, and Martin Lawrence did You So Crazy, but we're not really aware of the touring that went with that. Was there an event? Was there not? How long of a thing was it? At the time, it's blurred for me. I don't really know. Right. And no, it's no shots. Martin is a fucking legend. He's Martin Lawrence. I'm saying from a touring perspective, I don't know. When the Kings of Comedy made the decision to go on tour, this was when the only tours I knew about, you had the big black comedy explosions. You had, you know, you had tours that were put together. Promoters were putting packages together, and these were theaters, and I was lucky enough to open on some of them and be a part of some of those little shows, and some were comedy clubs, some were not. You guys went to fucking arenas.
Yeah.
With this package. Said you became the size of an attraction that's attached to a basketball game.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that this tour was going to be that big when you sat down to do it?
You know, you hear the idea, like when we heard the concept, you loved it right away. Because the thing for me, the thing that I kind of remember, like you said, you had Eddie was an anomaly. Like he just was a super big rock star. Everybody knew, like, he's Eddie Murphy. He is what he is. Martin was the same as an individual. You're right. We never really heard the tour. The only thing I knew that toured like that was the Budweiser Superfest.
Yes.
Which was music, right?
Yes.
And this was the idea of like, oh, all your top people at one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what you're doing, right? Mm. And when Duke presented it to us, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's hot, right? And of course,
before our culture, I got to say it against it. We don't, before you guys, we did not have the example of the individuals from our culture that was doing it at that level. Like, it's not like, you know, Pryor was out doing arenas and selling them out crazy. Or, you know, we know Eddie, like you said, is an anomaly. But after that, there was no example of a comedic figure or team that was doing it at that level in our culture. Andrew Dice Clay, he was touring. Andrew Dice Clay, and once again, anomaly, fucking through the roof. But when you guys came, it was the biggest thing to happen in that spectrum, in that light.
Yeah. And
until this day, it's one of the biggest tours of all fucking time. And my, my thing is, when you guys were in it, did you realize how fucking massive it was, man?
Yeah, yeah. Like, pretty early on, you recognized, because we started to get pre-sales. Like we started in Dallas, which was great. Because Steve used to have a club in Dallas. He had a big brand there. He used to be on the radio there. And so, and then like I say, I would go in and be the host of his show when he was gone. Mm-hmm. So I was big there, and then Bernie. So it was just us three at first, the first year. But that like sold out quick, like boom, you know. And then we went around and we did maybe like 12 to 20 shows with that one. We got Tori as the MC, and it was me, Bernie, and Steve. Mm-hmm. And then it just got bigger. Like every time, like every opportunity. We came to do the United Center and sold it out like four times.
Insane.
Like that kind of nonsense. Like insane. The United, where Jordan and we come in, we sell out two, it's gone. They call, hey, y'all, can y'all come back in 2 weeks or something like that? We like, damn, for real? Like, yep, let's go. It was crazy. That was, you know, that's the first time you get introduced to the private jet life, and everybody got their own limos, and of course, you know, with Negroes, you knew it was gonna go bad. niggas start getting extra hotel suites, and who had the baddest bitches on out there? It just got stupid.
Talking about the Kings of Comedy, how monumental it was. Say, you guys were rock stars. I'll never forget when, you know, they showed, and we got to get to how the Kings of Comedy movie came about, but I'll never forget watching the movie and said, y'all got the suits, y'all got the hats, y'all got the cigars. It was the most that I've seen quality within perception attached to the craft of comedy.
Yeah.
You guys looked like success. You guys look like fucking success. Suited and booted from head to toe. And this is what it's supposed to be. It's a business. Yeah, we play cards in the back. You guys, you changed the dynamic in visual.
Yeah.
That was attached to comedy. It's like nothing I've ever seen. And when you talk about the limos, you talk about the private jets. What? Who the fuck? How the what? Is that for jokes?
Yeah,
for real jokes? Are you kidding me? So I'm telling you, the level of inspiration and motivation that came from watching you brothers take that opportunity and turn it into what you did. Are you aware of where Kings of Comedy is on all-time stand-up list?
No, I'm not.
Are you? So there's a list, and it's the you know, the highest grossing stand-up comedy movies that were released theatrically. You guys are three or two on the list. Eddie Murphy Raw is first. I got Let Me Explain up there, and it's you guys. Now keep in mind, I also had Laugh at My Pain. Laugh at My Pain and Laugh at My Pain and Let Me Explain and What Now. Those are the three. But my other two are well below. The Let Me Explain nudged you guys, but there is such a large separation from the three grossing numbers. And we're talking about stand-up comedy that got released theatrically.
Theatrically.
Which is unheard of. It was unheard of.
Yeah, that is. And it's what, 25 years old, maybe. Still.
Said you guys were at like 30-something million.
Yeah.
30-something million from that. So how did Spike Lee get involved? How did you guys go to the place of saying, okay, guys, this is what we're going to do? Who came up with
that? We were putting the movie together, and then, you know, the tour was killing. The tour was killing, and we felt like it needed a cultural thing. And I think that was Walter Lathan, you know, again, at that time, that was like, You know, we need to push for somebody like Singleton or Spike Lee. He was like, we wanted it, the idea to capture the culture, like to mm-hmm. be black as it could be, mm-hmm. and not just like a oh, get anybody to shoot this. And so that's when Spike Lee came up, his name came up, and everybody agreed, like, oh, that would be dope. Let's see if we can get Spike Lee. And we just they just reached out, and that's how we put the deal together.
Why did it end? Why did the tour end?
The tour ended because it was, you know, it's interesting because it was, you know, for me, I'm a lot like you, Kev. Like, I live in the beautiful life, man. Like, I don't fuck around. I don't be mad at people. Mm-hmm. I ain't got time to be, you know. But it was some stuff there where everybody's head got big, and mm-hmm. including the promoter. You know, that he became where he wanted his name in front of everything. That unacceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, he wanted to own the movie. It was a whole deal before we even got the movie made about mm-hmm. him just wanting to pay us, and he had a movie. I'm like, dude, we're the writers. Mm-hmm. Like, this is our movie. Like, mm-hmm. we wrote this movie. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have a movie without us. So that's unacceptable. You can't mm-hmm. be the only dude that's getting residual money. So that took a whole thing. But it was the kind of stuff that broke it up, because everybody had their own ideas of what they wanted from the situation. And we were all, you know, four guys with these different camps. And, you know, and so eventually just doing business, it just got to the point where everybody like, look, man, I don't trust you. You know, mm-hmm. you know, you this and that. And we just kind of burnt out. So
how many years before you got to that place, though? How many years did you guys?
We toured 4 years. And we shot the movie, Jesus. And that the movie was kind of the pinnacle. I think we did maybe three or four more shows after the movie, and the movie came out, it blew up, and you know,
I want to go on record and say you know me, and you know that I'm genuine. You know, I don't blow the smoke up your ass just because. I'm gonna go on record, man, and say truly not only one of the biggest tours to ever touch Ticketmaster, Live Nation, all of it, the biggest, and I'm talking about compared to rock and roll, compared to the numbers.
Yeah,
you go do your homework, people, and I'm well versed in this fucking area. One of the biggest fucking tours of all time to date was done by these men. The thing that I'm going to ask you, said, because it's going to be, I'm curious for your answer. If you could go back now, after seeing all that success, after seeing like, what the fuck, and now you're outside of it and you really realize what you did. If there was anything that could have been changed or corrected to try to make it last a little longer, do you think that you would go back now and try to fix certain things between the group?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I definitely tried many, many times. That was, you know, again, I was the only one that wasn't mad at nobody. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Because, you know, we came from a point of truth. When we did our deal, we the one that got everybody paid. Mm-hmm. We was like, look, guys, like we writing this movie. So when everybody was willing to take like a big lump sum, I was like, no. So again, but it was one of those things that afterwards, I wish I had the kind of concept to be able to get everybody to understand that we are individuals, but this is an individual.
Fuck you.
So let's treat it with respect, right? We don't have to be partners if we don't want to be. But God, this business right here belongs to itself, and we should treat it as such. We should honor that as what it is, and then we could go do it, and we can get out. And we can go do it, and we can get out. We don't have to be buddies if that's what. But you know, at the time, people take it so personal, you know, and you just don't. You don't get. You get past understanding that, you know, New Edition is a thing. Ralph, Bobby, Rick, and Mike—they all different folks. You know what I'm saying?
You guys,
New Edition is its own thing. Like, let it be a thing. Let it run for 20 years, dog.
I mean, 30, sir, you 40, guys,
50 years.
You guys were Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. You guys were LeBron, fucking D-Wade, Bosh. You guys were the first, I'm going to say this once again on record, you guys were the first team from our culture that was assembled that equally shared high levels of stardom. And, you know, RIP to the late, great legend, Bernie Mac. Yeah. You know, we were talking about the TV shows. I left Bernie out by accident, but Bernie had a show. Bernie was a fucking headliner. Like, you all fucking did it. So, you know, there's so much that goes into that. And it comes up all the time. And I always just bow down to the kings of comedy because, you know, there are no major doors opened up for comedy and touring if you guys didn't kick that bitch off the hinges the way that you did. But then after that, there's life after. Saturday the Entertainer. Well, Sad didn't stop. You know, DL didn't stop. Burnin didn't stop. But Sad fucking went. Sad did specials. Yeah. Sad kept the goddamn ball rolling. Sad started popping off movies. The transition from, of course, Kings of Comedy, of course, TV, to then movies, Seb became a leading man. Where was your mindset at this point, you know, when all of this is happening?
You know, this is that time where, you know, you all, like you say, most comedians, we just trying to figure out how to elevate, right? You're trying to get to the next move. So Steve Harvey show is coming to an end because we're touring the Kings of Comedy while the Steve Harvey show is still popping, right? So we're touring that. And so that's what was dope. Like we come off the tour and then you brand and you pull up on the lot in the trucks, you know, Jesus Christ. It was just all,
you
just
got money.
So big.
You got
it
money dripping so out your ass. It's money just falling out.
Yeah.
Don't touch that bag. Don't touch.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Bag.
Please.
Give
guys.
Me a bag, please.
Yeah,
please.
Man, send that's good. To me. I'm gonna put that. Yeah. Oh, I left some money. I left.
What?
How much you leaving
there? How much? I forgot all about that 100 grand.
That was in my dressing room on the counter.
Leave it there. I get it next week. I'll be back.
Well, y'all take that then. Go ahead.
No, you know what? That's for y'all. Wait, yeah. Sir, this is a lot.
I just work here.
I don't
deliver coffee. That's too much. I'm sorry.
No, listen, everybody deserves a shot. Today was yours. You saying you giving metaphors. You giving metaphors with your tips. Hey, listen, life is a band-aid. Today I just covered you up.
You know what I'm saying? Some of you just gotta cover up the wound. You know what I mean?
What?
That ain't got nothing to do with thanks though. Appreciate it. But we came with Johnson Family Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It was an opportunity that, you know, was an idea that, you know, we had scrambling around. Got a, you know, Kings was hot. People was talking to us, all the studios trying to figure out who want to do what. And Fox Searchlight was a small little, you know, upcoming kind of joint at the time. And mm-hmm. So they wanted to take the chance, but they allowed me to produce. And
that's what I was going to get at. How did you understand that you could tap into that creative side? Because, you know, at this point, you're part of the show, but it's not your show. At this point, Kings of Comedy, you guys are doing it together. But the reason why I asked you the question, Seth, is because I remember Birds and the Bear. I remember you stepping into that producing space. I remember you as the leading man, but you were in the forefront of creating and producing. So how did you make that turn? What light bulb went off?
It was that time when you started to see like the networks not really needing, because Steve Harvey show had built WB up, mm-hmm. You know, CW, all of them had built themselves off Moesha and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And now they ain't got it no more. Now it's a little more white over there, every network. And you're starting to see like, oh,
Supernatural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're like, all right, so we not really need it. And you started to see like, it's going to be important to be able to have your voice, like when you do things. And so movies felt like you had way more control than you did in TV, because TV has so many voices and people from the top in the corporation of it all. But movies, in my mind, at least, you know, as a kind of dude, just kind of thinking of it outside the box, gave me the opportunity to be like, oh, I could go over and make my own movie, because we had started to see people do their own thing. Ice Cube with Fridays and all that kind of stuff was popping. You're like, oh, people just taking their ideas and saying, all right, I can go do that.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of believe it to be so. So I basically took that attitude. And so we went And, you know, the movie, put that movie together, shot it, had a blast, it did well. And that was it. So, you know, I was hot in the movie game at that point. And so
when
movies like Barbershop came across and, you know, The Honeymooners, I produced that. And Codename The Cleaner, we produced that, you know. So all of those things became like just where the steps were. Now you make a misstep, or that's the other thing. It's a very hard thing in this business, too, with us, if you make a misstep. Like for Black people, we don't get a lot of misses.
No, maybe one and a half. Maybe one and a half.
Maybe one and a half.
If you're lucky, you get two. If you're lucky. Because why do we need to have patience? I don't need that patience with you. Not with them. I'm not going to have patience with them. You know what? We're done doing business with them because I feel like they're going to take us under.
You'd be
Wait, I grossed? What about these?
I was just at lunch with you, Peter. What are you talking about? We were just laughing.
What happened? You just told me I was the golden child here at the drop of a dime. The drop of a dime. But said, I applaud and just, I fucking really admire. I admire your journey to today. You know, you're one of the most liked, if not the most liked, comedians in the fucking business. And you're one of those guys that when you come across on camera, whether it's the big screen, whether it's TV, people instantly smile. People instantly go fucking sad. Like there's so much love that comes your way because you can tell that that's what you give off. And that's one of the things that I think is an amazing quality. It's just a dope fucking feeling to have. My favorite performance of Cedric the Entertainer, man, said when you did fucking what's Rock's latest Rock's movie where you played the
Five,
man, listen to me, said you,
that's a funny
listen,
dude.
You listen, I don't know what the character was written as. Said, I don't know if it was written for you. I never read the script. Said, when I tell you that I have never seen an individual smash an individual so hard. When you tell a motherfucking room, you try to steal the hangers.
They got the lock on. They hip to your boy, man.
They must know what I do around. Man said, when I tell you, you put your foot in that movie's ass. That and the sweat stain on the bed when you got done, fucking.
That's truly inside the jokes, man, because that's for comedians. When you do shit like that, you know that the comics gonna go. And that's what's so great about doing that with Chris, because Chris, you know, he love it. He great, you know, he love that pen, but he love comedy. So, you know, when he told me what the character was, it was like, come on, man. Come on, dog. I got him. Don't even worry about it. Stop writing, man. You can stop writing. I got him.
I've never seen anything funny.
As stand-ups, we all have met this dude in every city. The promoter that's giving you the business about how big it's going to be and how dope he got it. And then it'd be some full-on mess. You get I remember one time I got picked up and dude told me it was going to be a limo pick me up, and it was. But it was he was driving the limo. And it was a baby seat in the back, dog. Like when I got in the car, it was a car seat in the back, and he had to go and pick up his son before he took me to the hotel. So I'm like, in a limo for sure. Now I'm in a limo, but it's a little boy next to me, man. Just like,
I told you, man.
It is the long one. It's the long 14 passenger joke. He had put the divider up. Man, wait, hold up, man. Don't leave me back here with this little baby.
Hey, man, I don't need privacy with this baby. Hold on, bro. Put the thing down, man. Yeah, I don't need it.
I'm on the phone real quick. Man.
This one's going to make you laugh. I got to talk about this, man. All right, guys. Wait. Once again, too much fucking fun. We're inside the mind of the man, the myth, the legend, This is Cedric the Entertainer himself. We'll be right back. All right, Ced, we are back, man, and we got more conversation to be had. You're going to fucking laugh, and I promise you, this floors you, because I need to know the real, okay? To our listeners, you all know Naeem Lynn. Naeem Lynn is my guy. He's a plastic cup boy. You guys listen to Straight From The Heart. You know Naeem. I think he's an asshole. Here's what you guys do not know. Cedric the Entertainer fired Naeem Lynn from the road. Naeem Lynn has yet to tell me the story, but I'm going to tell you what I think that it was. Once upon a time, Naeem Lynn was on the road with Cedric the Entertainer and JJ. Shout out to goddamn Jay.
JJ.
JJ is one of the fucking funniest. JJ has always been one of the funniest. Now, Naeem Lynn was going up after Jay. JJ was going on stage and host, and Naeem Lynn, from my understanding, was fucking struggling. He would come back to L.A., and I would say, how you do, man? He's like, man, I'm good, but the crowds, they be weird, man. You know, it's just different on the road with them. And I was like, why? Why is it different? How's Ced do? He's like, Ced be killing. I was like, well, how Jay do? He's like, man, Jay be straight. He be straight. He be killing. I said, well, why are you struggling? He's like, I don't know, man. Something happening in the middle. I don't know if it's the transition or what. Then one day I was like, maybe you can't follow Jay. Is that what's happening here? Maybe you can't follow Jay. Is that what's happening? He's like, nah, man, they ain't it at all. And 2 weeks later, Ced fired him. Nobody will give me the truth. Ced, did you fire Naeem or not? I'm asking for the truth, once and for all.
No, man. I'm just letting go, man, because I was using him. Like I like that he was real edgy, and I was trying to write like some edgier material, and so, but you know his stuff is very Naeem-ish. You know what I mean? It's very much like, and
I put my fingers in the pussy and spread my fingers. Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how to make none of that work. For I was like, that's hilarious, but. What's the version that I can do?
You ever put your dick in the butt, and when you do it, the butt spread like, whoa? You're like, hey man, real funny. That was real good.
That's good for you. That's good for you. Like, but I don't know where I could benefit from that version. It ain't no easy way to tell that joke without so. We tried it for a minute. Like, again, I thought he was funny as hell. I loved the fact that he was edgy, and I was looking for like edgier stuff. And that's how I ended up getting Malik, because Malik was the same thing, but he knew how to kind of help me shape my ideas that still could tell this thing. So that was the only thing with Naeem, man.
It sounds like you fired him, Ced. It sounds like you fired him. I see what you're
trying. I just let it go, man. It was just a let go. It was just a let go, man. that's my guy, man. I was like, he told me y'all be killing him too.
Man, we like, fucking man, kill him. Every time he say something else, you know, Kev, I can't wait to get from underneath this goddamn shit. I'm like, well, I'll tell you who ain't gonna take you. Ced, I tell you that much. I tell you, you're not gonna go over there to Ced's camp because you've been there. And they fucking gave you the boot, didn't they? They gave you the fucking boot. Shout out to Malik, too. Very, very funny guy. Ced, man, I can't say it enough, dude. You are truly, truly one of my favorite people. I want to know who has inspired Ced within comedy. Who does Ced look at and go, holy shit, man, goddamn. Dead or alive, it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, probably my first greatest inspiration, you know, other than, you know, of course, the Super Kings, which is Richard and Eddie for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, I love both of those guys. But the late Robin Harris, man, was my guy.
Wow. Man. Wow.
He was the kind of comedian that I was able to identify with and see myself as, because he wasn't like the superstar with the leather suits or none of that. Like, he just... like somebody uncle up on stage, you know, and you like, oh.
Effortlessly funny. Effortlessly. Yeah,
and just the funniest, he was like, and I was like, oh, if you can do that, then yeah. So he was definitely one of my biggest inspirations, you know, comedy-wise. Got to shout out Steve Harvey. You know, Steve was one of the dudes who really taught me the business, like gave me a lot of great opportunities. You know, it was like wear the suits and be clean on stage, treat it like a business. He was like, treat this like a business, man. Like go up there, you know, and even in negotiating, you know, and the relentlessness. This dude, I've seen him go up and down, you know, a lot of people would be loved to, you know, like go, oh, Steve fell off or this happened to that. But man, I've seen this dude be at every level of this game, like top of it, bottom of it. And he always just had that drive, like to believe in himself. And so, you know, you see him to this day, like over in Dubai and living on jets and living on yachts. And you go like that dude been, that's his spirit. Like, and so I trust that. I embrace that, you know, and I believe that the same way. And so, you know, even when he was like, he had like a little low period and I was able to put him in Johnson Family. So, you know, here I am producing movies. I call him. I'm like, yo, be my brother, dog, in this and let's go. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like those kind of things are what you love to see happen. And so, just comedy in general, man. Like it's so many people, Rock, I love, man. I love to see. He'd been somebody like early on. We just always been cool and just steady. And so whenever you look at those opportunities, but
you see it in the relationships, by the way. It's very clear. You know, you see, I see when you're with your fucking your brothers, you see how close you and Seth are when you Steve are when you're with Steve. You see it when you're with fucking when you're with Rock. You see it. And I love that. I love to hear you give them their flowers like that. That's what it's about, man.
George Lopez, got to put George in there. Another one of my dogs.
That's right. You did. Let's not leave that out, man. You gotta pay homage to Black Brown Get Down. You, Lopez, Eddie Griffin, and DL. How long did you guys tour?
In the late Charlie Murphy.
Fuck, man. RIP Charlie Murphy. Yeah. God damn. And how did that one come about?
That was another one. That was another. George wanted to. He wanted to honor Richard Pryor. It was a statue that they wanted to put up on the river in Peoria, Illinois, and they didn't have enough money. They needed like 80 grand to finish this statue and put it up and erect it and all this stuff. And so George had his idea. He just called everybody and asked us, would we be willing to donate our time to come to Peoria and do this show? And it would just so happen I was in the Lou, and I was like, I was visiting my mom. I was like, oh, Peoria, like a little 2-hour drive. I was like, bet, I'm going to do that. I'll come up. I'll do that. And then everybody just agreed to do it. And so we all went. It was big. It ripped. And we had sold out some arena. And the promoters was, again, one of these serendipitous things. The promoters was like, yo, this is great. You guys want to do it again? You know, and we were like, all right, put it together. And we see what everybody look at it. And we all decided to do it. That ran 4 years.
You guys did that for a minute.
We had a TV show. We never did a special on that one, though. But we did have a series on BET where we did 10 episodes about it. That was dope. That was fly. And a lot of great times, man. But he's just one of those dudes with a good spirit, funny as hell always. And you know, again, just, you know, ends up being your brother, man. You know,
he's so a fucking great guy. He's a great guy, man. But it's no coincidence that you have been in the situations that you've been in with the people that you've been in them with. Like, you know, good energy attracts good energy. It's that simple. In closing, dude, I just want to tell you, you are maybe a couple weeks away from seeing OK Hart pull up at your house and just surprise you with one of these whips. You know, I know that you have embraced this old school culture set, and I've been leaving you alone. I called you a couple times. I've given you a couple threats on the phone, and I know you think I'm playing with you. I'm just waiting for the right time to pull up on you, and I don't know how yet. I don't know how I'm going to pull up on you, but I'm going to make it aggressive. I'm definitely not going to have a shirt on. I know where you live.
I went to Utah to see our boy. And
Ken Diggit.
Ken Diggit. Yeah. And then I said, and he was like, oh, I said, oh shit, Ken. Okay, wait a minute. All right. Trying to go there with it. Yeah. Okay.
I got some shit over there. Yeah, I respect your car game though, Seth.
Yeah, I've been having fun with him.
you got some heat, man. It's a different level of love that goes into them old school cars. They last forever. So
yeah,
I understand why you over there with it, man. And you look good doing it too. That's what's important.
Yeah, it's been great. It's one of them cool things to get out, man. And you know, the more you try to keep it safe and stay out of trouble, you got to find them other hobbies that just like, all right, cool. This I can ride around and not be in some nonsense.
You come over my house, there's 5 bird houses in the back. That's what I've been doing. Building bird houses and painting them. That's what I've been doing.
Oh, nice. That's a good skill set.
This is where these pigs, you know, I got these little birds coming. This one right here said, let me show you these birds. That's where the fuck my hobbies have went.
And so you like, oh, you let the birds just come, the natural birds come and you paint the bird houses.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you, Kev. God bless you, Kev. God fucking bless you. Ladies and gentlemen,
but you start telling me all kinds of birds. Yeah. You know what that is? A flying sparrow. And these guys, you'll be like, Kev.
Blue. Have you ever seen a blue-tailed bird?
No.
You've never seen anything like it. I promise you.
you see get all bird. Excited. Oh my God. Look.
There it is. Right there, Seth. Do you see it? Yeah, man. I don't give a fuck about that bird. We drinking or not, Kev.
Do it taste like chicken?
No, say we can't cook the blue-tailed bird.
Oh, you can't cook a sparrow?
Ladies and gentlemen, God damn it, we were inside the mind of the man, the myth, the legend, Cedric the Entertainer. Said, I cannot thank you enough, man. Genuinely, I appreciate you, and I love you, man. You're a real one. You're a friend for real, and I appreciate what you've done for our craft and for our culture, man. You are definitely a guy whose name will be in lights for fucking ever, dude. Your story is an amazing one. You're continuing to write more chapters to it. So keep shining, brother. The world is watching, and we are all fans. I love you, Chad.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.